Hey there! Are you a queer musician? Do you want to be featured on our podcast? We at Classical Queeros want to celebrate voices that often get silenced. And if that includes yours, then we want to hear it. Send us an email telling us about yourself and why we should feature you on a new segment about local queer musicians. In each episode, we'll include a snippet of a musician like you. A tiny interview, a quick performance, whatever feels best for the star of the segment. Email us today at classicalqueeros@gmail.com.
If you want to find out about classical queers, then you're in the right place with Alice and Jaheed.
Yeah!
Hello, and welcome to Classical Queeros, the podcast where two queer people of color aim to de-straighten the history of classical music. I'm Shahid, and I cannot wait to binge the new season of Sabrina on Netflix after Ooh. I finish this next week of school.
I have not watched that show.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
Is it? I've heard, like, okay, well, like, my initial impression of that show was, like, edgy Sabrina the Teenage Witch. That's an interesting take, you know? But then I heard that it was really good, but then it was also, like, a disaster, and it's, like, kind of in the same realm as, what's it called, Riverdale, which I know was always a disaster, but... Maybe, I mean, if you think it's good, then it has to
yeah.
be good.
Yeah, so. You know, I've never seen Riverdale, and I've heard so many good things about it, but I do know mm-hmm. there's, like, some connection there, and one mm-hmm. of the episodes is like, ooh, a reference, oh, that, somebody, like, from Riverdale or something. Oh, I was like, uh-huh. oh, that show. but I'm, like, okay. It's, like, really, it's really kind of, like, hellish and, mm-hmm. like, ghoulish, which I love that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. And it's also, like, teenage drama, which I also love that kind of stuff, so uh-huh. it's like perfect for me. but I also have always just been a really big fan of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like the sitcom that was on like one of those networks, and then like the animated one, the cartoon.
There's a cartoon? I don't know anything.
You don't remember the cartoon? Mm-mm. It was like a kid's cartoon. Mm-hmm. And you know I love black cats, and Salem yes. is just like, yeah, so.
Wait, I have a story about black cats. It's not about an actual black cat, so please do not get excited and then disappointed. Okay. But yesterday, Sam and I were just talking because we were like, someday far in the future, we're going to get a black cat. Like, far in the future, because we have Rosie right now. But someday we want to get a black cat because... people, like, I don't know why people, like, hate on black cats so much, because, like, them being superstitious is, like, who even believes that anymore, you know? But anyway, we're gonna get a black cat. And then yesterday we went on a date night, and Sam took me out to Cheese Walla in Redlands, because Whoa. I've been talking about that grilled cheese ever since I went there with you over a year and a half ago. And that barbecue mac and cheese grilled cheese was exactly as good as I remembered. I was so happy. And then she took me to this French restaurant called Le Chat Noir, which means the black cat. Yeah. And she was like, wait a second, what does noir mean? And I was like, black. And I was like, and she was like, oh my God, I didn't even plan that.
That is so cute. Where is the French restaurant?
It's it was in Riverside. Riverside. Like, wow, really close to UC Riverside. Yeah, it was cute. It was small. We got creme brulee. The only person inside the restaurant was the guy who runs it, and he had a thick French accent, and he was very nice.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really nice.
So you got some authentic French food too.
Hell yeah. It was awesome. Really good. Yeah, we had amazing food yesterday.
Wow. Oh yeah. My gosh, I always rave, like, shout out to Cheese Walla, because yeah. I always rave about that place to, like, literally everyone I meet. I'm like, have you been to Cheese Walla? and they're like, we don't even live in California. So I don't know, I just, like, love it so much.
Yeah, low-key, while we were there last night, I was like, should we move to Redlands so I can go to Cheese Walla all the time?
Do it. So I can visit you and we can both go to Cheese Walla.
Oh my God, yeah.
So good.
So good.
I actually today just went to the store and I bought, because I was craving, like, a grilled cheese, and I got, like, tomato soup. Like, I'm just, like, mm-hmm. so excited to make that. Especially since good. It's been kind of cold recently.
Yeah, it has been cold, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in today's episode,
wait, can I introduce myself?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm so sorry for interrupting you.
Let Alice talk. Yeah, do it.
Okay. Hello, my name is Alice. my pronouns are she, her. And I am drinking tea out of a mug that has a climbing hold instead of a handle, which makes me feel fun.
And that's a climbing hold? Oh my god, like a rock?
Yeah, well, not just a rock, but like on a rock climbing wall.
Yeah,
the things that you grab onto are called holds. Yeah, a color. Look, I mean, so I'm angling my camera so you can see.
Yeah. What kind of tea is it?
It's, oh my god, it's my favorite tea ever. It's called, I don't know what it's called. Vanilla apple hibiscus, I think.
Ooh.
It's wow. So good, yeah. Like, most teas are, like, kind of like how, like, a LaCroix is, like, the hint of watermelon. It's like a watermelon was nearby when they poured this, like, soda water into the can. And so, like, I feel like most teas are kind of like that, but hot. But this tea, like, I drank it, and it was, like, all, like, it was, like, the essence of sweetness, but, like, actually, like, within me. And it wasn't just, like, oh, I feel like sweetness was nearby. It was just, like, oh, now it is part of me. It basically is really good. It's a really good tea.
That sounds like amazing tea. I think you just sold me on that tea. When you said it, like, I'm not even, we're obviously not in the same room, but when you said it, I swear I got, like, a whiff of, like, a tea shop opening, like.
Should we move to Redlands together and open up a tea shop?
Yeah. Actually, they used to have Augie's, which is, I guess, coffee, but I used to love going there. I think there was, like, some drama recently with the store, like, being able to stay open or something, which is BS, but I think they still have their Riverside location, so. But if we open up a tea shop, what would it even be called?
Classical Tea Rose, obviously.
Classical Tea Rose. Oh my god. I love it.
Yeah, Classical Tea Rose with Shateed and Alice.
Shateed. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it's gonna be so good.
Can we, like, ask all of our, like, episode topics, like, find out what was their favorite flavor of tea, and then, like, instead of naming it the tea, it'll be like, this is the Wendy Carlos, or like, you know,
yeah, this is the Wendy Carlos, this is the Billy Strayhorn,
right,
this is the Ethel Smythe, I'm assuming,
yeah,
because she's dead.
Ethel Smythe has to be English tea, like,
oh yeah, just like a nice Earl Grey, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's so cool. I love your mug. It's just, like, so
you. Yeah,
me too.
Yeah. It makes me happy. Okay, continue with the episode. I'm ready.
Alrighty. So in today's episode, we are going to talk about an amazing trans woman composer whose work, can only be described as moving, thought-provoking, and unique in that it is truly a reflection of her life.
Mm, I'm excited. I have no idea who it is.
You haven't told me. No idea.
Yeah, you were like, I'm changing who I'm doing. I'm so excited. You're going to love this one. I'm like, I don't know anything.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm glad I could keep it a secret for so long. And I tried keeping it a secret from other people, but I couldn't. But I haven't told that many people.
Okay,
so that's good.
Yeah, and it never made it back to me. So it's like, great. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I feel like these past couple of, like, weeks, like, researching and kind of getting into what she does, it's just so enlightening, and it's given me kind of a new perspective on art in general, I think, and how I connect to art.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But it's our opening segment. What do you say, gay?
Yeah!
I would like to ask you, Alice Park.
Me, Alice Park.
What is your favorite marching band memory?
That's a good question. You know, marching band was a very, like, pivotal and important 4 years of my life. And it's like, it's one of those things where even though I look back and sometimes cringe at, like, a lot of myself and the things that I did and enjoyed while I was in marching band, it still was like, I wouldn't change any of it, and I loved it so much, and it, like, played a huge role in my life. I love marching band. I would say, to be perfectly honest, I think my favorite marching band memory was my junior year. We made it to championships at the end of the season every year. But my high school at that point in time had never, ever, ever placed, like, one first, second, or third place out of 12. And we were in the stands during the, what's it called? The, award ceremony. During the award ceremony. And we're waiting. They were like, 12th place, 11th place, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. They were like, 6th place. And they still hadn't called us. And we were like, oh, okay, already. We're going to place higher than we've ever placed before, because the highest we'd ever gotten before that was 6th place. And they were like, 5th place, still not us. And we were like, wah! And they're like, 5th place, 4th place. And then they were like, oh my god, we're placing! Wah! Like, the electricity was like better than I'd ever felt it in my whole life to this day. And then they were like, 3rd place, Royal High School. And we were like, wah! But like, when, so at, at least with my high school, the like protocol was when you get announced to have won something, whether it's like the overall placement or like the color guard award or, you know, whatever, whoever, like the assistant drum major in the stands will call the band to attention, and then you have to, you know, stand there at attention silently until your salute line on the field touches the trophy, and then we can like cheer. So they were like, Royal High School, and we were like just like silently, like elatedly squirming, and then they touched the trophy and like we exploded, and I've never like that was just so much joy, you know. It was like a collective joy too.
Whoa, you just,
yeah,
brought,
I would
back
say that's my favorite.
So many feelings that I like had not remembered, but that is so true. Like I remember those, yeah, exact, like everyone's looking at each other like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. But you can't, mm-hmm, do anything about it.
I know. Yeah, yeah, marching band is wild because it's like so many people, but you're all in it together, even if you don't like some of them.
Yeah, yeah, even like, yeah, through the worst, it's like it doesn't matter because you're all gonna march on this muddy field while it's raining before a competition at like, and you were up at like 5 a.m like on a, yeah, bus.
Yeah.
I totally, yeah.
Yeah, 5 a.m. on a bus, muddy field, white pants in my case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hairspray for like days. Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome.
What's your favorite marching band memory?
My favorite marching band memory, I always recount this, is it was my sophomore year, and we were doing our show at Arcadia, and there was a set in like the ballad where we were playing like Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and then we basically, it like we hit like a huge, like a huge set, I guess, is that what it's called? I don't know, it's been so long. Where you like hit,
no, I know what you,
like,
mean, I,
you know, play to the box, and then you're like play, yeah, everyone's playing really loud, and it's like the big emotional impact part of,
yeah,
the ballad.
Like the, yeah, the impact moment, yeah.
Yeah, and so we were playing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and we hit that impact, and it, like, I don't know how this happened, but it just, like, started pouring rain immediately. Like,
oh,
it was,
God,
just, like, it synchronously started pouring rain while we hit the set, and the field, the color guard, was, like, all across the field. And they, uh-huh, were spinning a giant rainbow. Like, so,
wow,
a giant rainbow, like...
Wait, I'm so sorry. I love this story so much, but can you hear Rosie?
No.
She's like... Brr, brr, brr.
That is,
I think, she,
I wish
I think
I could.
She's not in here. Yeah, I'm gonna let her in. Hang on a second, I'll be right back. Okay. She's in?
No, she's not.
No, she... Rosie, was she here the whole time?
No, I let her in very quietly.
Oh.
Sorry,
okay, anyway, I'm sorry. Hello.
It's okay. I can't hear your computer either, if that,
okay,
helps.
Good. I hope that my microphone isn't picking it up.
No, I mean, I can't hear it at all.
Okay,
I,
well, that's good.
I can only hear your voice and silence, so.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because it's just like...
Whoa. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Where were we? The color. Oh.
Oh yeah.
The color guard the was color rainbows. Guard,
right. They were spinning flags and like they were in lines like spinning red, orange, yellow, green, blue, wow. all across the field, and it was raining, and it was so emotional, like that. I don't even know how, but also everyone just started crying. And at the time I was marching sousaphone and I was just like in tears. I was like blubbering. I was like trying to play, like marching backwards and like just trying to
marching backwards with a sousaphone just, like, in and tears. Crying.
And you could like, I was like marching and I could see people like passing by me, like also crying, just like really fast, like marching.
Oh my God.
I was just like, what is going on? It was like so bizarre. It was so emotional.
Oh my God.
But wow. I remember after we got our performances, everyone dried up and we were all just like at the buses. We were all crying. And like, I remember we were on the phone with one of our coaches and we were all crying to him and like so happy. It was just like such a sweet show.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
It was super amazing.
Wow. When was that? Like, how old were you?
That was my sophomore year. So I was probably 15. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, when in the season was it?
Arcadia for us, I guess Arcadia was usually towards the end of the season, like maybe a few weeks before Champs. So we had already been through the show a lot. So I think that was part of it. It's like, oh, we started finally getting the hang of it. You know how like,
oh yeah, yeah.
The first few shows are like real rough and then it's like, okay, we get it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was probably my favorite marching band memory.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
I actually, at the competition I was talking about at championships, that... Rosie! Give me 1 second. Oh my God. Rosie! What do you want? Hey, come here. Rosie wants attention. That's what she wants. Come here.
Our queen has entered the room.
I need you to make up your mind about where you want to be. I know it is against your nature because you were a cat. Rosie.
I don't know if you're going to put this in the podcast, but I'm currently watching Alice run around the room trying to get Rosie. Not doing a very good job, I think, because she's been running around. Oh, I think... Did she get her? I can't see. It's obscured. She did not succeed, people. She has failed.
I'm back.
I totally wasn't just narrating you trying to catch Rosie to our listeners.
I can't wait to hear it. Did you like our episode that was released today, actually, the Billy Strayhorn one, where I put your little song about Rosie and her poops at the very end, just like yes. by itself. I sing that to myself often, and also Sam, too.
I love it.
If you want to find out about Rosie's poops, then you're in the right place in Alice's room. Rosie, come back! Rosie! She's very hyper right now, so who knows what kind of entrances she's going to make today.
What kind of poops I will love she her. Have later? Who knows?
Okay. Oh, my gosh. Was I talking about something before she left or before she interrupted?
I don't think so. I think we're at break.
Oh, are we done now?
Is this our ad break?
I guess so.
All right. Time for a quick break.
Woo!
If you want to find out about classical queers, then you're in the right place with Alice and Jahid.
And we're back.
Yay! That was my favorite break so far of this episode.
Thank you. All
right. Well, I guess of the whole... That was the only break of this episode.
So far. Thus far, this has been my favorite break.
Hooray. Okay. I'm ready.
All right.
Teach me. I'm so excited.
Cool. So today's composer we're going to be talking about is Sarah Hennes.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Sarah Hennies is a multifaceted New York-based performer, composer, writer, film director, and many more things, who connects her art with aspects of identity.
That's awesome. We love that.
Yeah. She's currently a visiting professor at Bard College. She runs her own record label, which she founded, called Waiter Recordings.
And is, okay.
I know. and is a member of the Queer Percussion Research Group.
There's a Queer Percussion Research Group?
I know. I was so excited when I found that. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
So much I didn't know about percussion. And I think that's like why I've been so happy to find this, is because I feel like, you know, we're very disconnected from percussionists, I think.
Yeah, as flute I would players. Say so.
I don't know what they're doing back there, you know. They're like doing their thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like reading up on a lot of what she has to say about percussion and identity and like timbre taught me a lot. So it's been
that's
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been really nice to research.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. This episode I'm so excited.
Yeah, this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So
I'm so ready. Teach me.
Yeah. So personally, reading her words has really made me think about stuff I normally wouldn't think about. So she's like such a thought-provoking composer, and certainly has a lot of layers of nuance behind the meaning of her music. Here's a quote from the New York Times. "In almost everything I've done," she said, "there are psychoanalytical, non-musical aspects to it that I feel are various aspects of my being." So let's talk about her beginnings.
Okay.
She was born in Louisville, Kentucky in 1979.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, she's so young.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Right. She was drawn to music at an early age, wanting to play piano at age 5, but she couldn't get any lessons. So instead, she started learning drums at age 9, which is interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So here is an excerpt from Queer Percussion talking about like drums and why she picked drums, because it's kind of an interesting instrument to pick. I feel like, especially in the LGBTQ community, like I feel like there's a lot of, personally, like I know a lot of gay flute players, and I guess other instruments, but percussionists I know maybe like one or two personally.
You know, to think about it, I don't think I know any queer percussionists.
Yeah. Well, you're going to know one today.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I only know a few. And I think that was like also a big thing about queer percussion. And she talks about representation and why that matters. But this quote is really good. "Did I gravitate towards drums because it affirmed my boyhood to everyone around me? I was a natural at the instrument. I took to it immediately and learned fast in the context of what else was going on in my life. Near constant bullying at school, an emotionally absent father, and an emotionally abusive mother. These conditions created a child who believed deeply that something was wrong with me and that whatever it was badly needed fixing. I now can't think of any other reason for my asking for drums other than the logic that drums equals boys and being a good drummer means being a good boy. Repressed trans women do things like this all the time. We get married, have children, join the army, along with other quote unquote manly things, in an effort to cure ourselves of our womanhood. It never works."
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wow.
Right.
It's really powerful.
Very powerful. And I think that like idea of having, because there's like a couple of things in this that's like, it's like a couple of layers, right? That there is to unpeel to peel. is that the drums is like our idea of like masculinity in music, in the world of music.
It's very strong and aggressive.
Yeah. And even like I remember she wrote, she was like saying in this other article, like if you Google image search like percussion quartet or something like that, you're just going to see a lot of images of cis white men. Like the field of percussion itself is so homogeneous in like having kind of the same kind of same kind of people playing the same kind of music. And then so that's part of it. And then also just drums like being masculine, and like trans women having to, pre-transition, trying to prove themselves of their manliness. And I find that this is like kind of like similar to a lot of other aspects in like the entire spectrum of the LGBT community, is like gay men who are in denial trying to prove their masculinity, or the same thing with lesbian women trying to prove to themselves or to other people that they aren't, right? They'll do anything to appear what society wants them to, instead of doing what truly resonates within them.
I feel like that's incredible. I was just thinking now too about like the trans experience very obviously is one that is not my own and is one that I like see from an outside perspective. And I was thinking about trans women like pre-transition and how, but like from my very limited, very narrow, still rather uneducated viewpoint, like I was like, oh, well, trans women, like before they transition, before they come out, are just like boys who are feminine. Like that was I wasn't like consciously thinking that, but I realized that that's what I had been thinking when you read this quote. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been thinking, but that's not even the case. Of course, trans women would like feel the pressure to feel more manly. Of course that would happen, because like it's like the same thing as a compulsory heteronormativity but for your gender, which I'm sure is like a lot more
it's
so that's crazy,
right? It's I don't even know what else to say. I mean, of course, like you and I as cis people, like we can't possibly know what that's like, but only to sort of relate it to our own experiences. But just trying to kind of affirm something, whether it's out of denial or out of safety, because it's pretty awful. And that's something that she touches on again in reference to another piece, which we will get to.
Yay!
Yeah. So she enjoyed a variety of music at a young age, from the heartthrob boy band New Kids on the Block to the hair metal band Poison.
Oh my God.
She was like listening to a bunch of different things. And I think talking about like, oh, the boy band and listening to like music that's like maybe seen as effeminate, and then being able to hide in something that was like hair metal, which was so kind of at its time, like gender bending, like men were able to grow out long hair and wear makeup and stuff like that, is it's an interesting kind of safety point for children who have a hard time fitting into the, or like appearing masculine or appearing feminine, kind of somewhere in between. So at the same time, getting a little bit older, Henny's discovered the music of Cage, Parch, and Xenakis. She mentioned that she bought a recording of Xenakis' music because it would be good percussion stuff, and also because he had an interesting name, which is cool. and also enjoyed doing like noise improvisation, which would later lead to composition. So she was super interested in like the weird.
So she was doing the noise improvisation?
Yeah. She enjoyed doing like noise improv and was kind of getting interested in experimental music when she was in high school.
That's really cool.
Like she would improvise, and this like led to compositions that she would end up writing and a lot of her pieces that were, they started out sort of as improvisations. So she was very interested in weird and like just like generally like what do we still have that melodica sound effect?
Yeah.
Okay. She was like into like what the f- kind of music, and like just like music that was like weird and like brought out like a sense of curiosity. Like, oh, what is that? I don't know what that is. I want to find out. And so here's a really great interview quote from Sound Expanse. Since I was a kid, I have felt like a weird person, so it makes sense that I would be drawn to weird music, because if you're 16 and you feel like a weirdo and you find out there's a decades-long tradition of people doing weird stuff, there's definitely this feeling of like, oh my God, it's my people, that you didn't know existed before then. Again, like talking about, like I mentioned briefly, like the hair metal band and how they were a little bit gender bending and finding like a tradition of like, I guess, experimental music or new music that is so different than what you would normally hear. It must be like a nice calling to people who didn't feel like they fit in anyways. So it's like interesting to them and they relate to it on some level.
That's so good.
Yeah.
That's wow.
Right. It's gives me a whole other perspective on, on new music for sure.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I love this composer already. Her name is Sarah Hennies.
Yes.
Well, I love her. Where is she?
Sarah Hennies is currently in Ithaca. She lives in Ithaca, New York. I don't know where she is at this moment.
All right, let's go.
At this very second.
Let's go. We're coming, Sarah.
We're
just going to say hi.
We're going to go say hi.
Yeah.
We're just going to go say hi. Hi, Sarah.
We're your biggest fans.
I hope you're listening to this.
See you later.
I hope one day you'll listen to this. I'm your biggest fan.
Oh, my gosh.
So she was into this, like, metal music and, like, experimental music in high school. She transferred to a magnet school called DuPont Manual High School, which has, like, a huge performing arts school. And students can, like, major in, like, instrumental music and, like, voice.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, which is super awesome. And across the street from there was the library of music at University of Louisville. So she would, like, just go and get CDs and, like, try and find scores and want to perform them. I relate to this because when I was in high school, I also had no idea about stuff. I mean, I played in orchestra and that was kind of like my introduction to a lot of music. But also, like, I would go to the city branch library and just, like, rip CDs onto my iPod and just listen to them. And one that I remember in particular was Bartok's Miraculous Mandarin, and just, like, listen to it walking between classes. And then I also found Ippolitov Ivanov's Caucasian Sketches, which is, like, one of my favorite pieces, mostly because it has, like, a movement with this beautiful English horn viola duet and so gorgeous. And then there's a huge piccolo excerpt in that piece too. So it's a great, I totally relate
that's
to
necessary.
This. Yeah. Yeah, I totally relate to this, going to the library and just finding stuff and, like, listening to it.
Yeah. Also, so what you're saying is that you and Sarah Hennies should be best friends?
Yes, we should be best friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
That we'll make it happen.
We'll make it
You'll
happen.
See.
I'm like, I also went to the library and ripped CDs. Yeah, like, just, like, listen to music. So from this, she discovered a lot of stuff, like, by John Cage and other things. And this is, like, this hilarious quote that I want to read to you from an interview, again, on the Sound Expanse article or interview. So she's talking about this ensemble showcase concert she did her senior year. So this concert was just endless. It was so long, and I was playing 1/4 by John Cage and deliberately put in silences in it that was kind of going to happen no matter what, just from playing the piece. And at some point during one of the silences, I heard someone in the audience who was definitely someone's parent do this. They went, and I remember I almost started laughing on stage because I thought it was so funny. And I ended up releasing a recording of that piece like 20 years later. I just love that. Like, that just, like, makes me laugh. I can imagine just doing that and, like, you know, making people angry.
Oh, it wasn't a relaxed sigh. It was an.
I think it was like a yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I think. I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming because, I would start laughing if someone was, like, angry and I was trying to play this, like, experimental John Cage piece.
I would love to be at the point in my musical career and, like, personal mindset where if I was, like, you know, in the middle of the Ebert concerto, like, you know, it was just going and going, and someone in the audience just goes, ugh, you know? And I would just think it was funny more than anything. I'd love it to be at that point, because I think if that happened to me now, I would cry.
I know. It's so, yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah.
So So Sarah also dealt with a lot of bullies in school, but when she was in her teenagers, she discovered and loved punk rock. And so she actually found kind of an escape being able to play drums with a punk band with some college kids. Like, she was like,
so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. She was like totally into punk rock for years. And she was like this teenager who's playing drums and was kind of like an outcast at school, or like kind of was like, you know. And then there's these college kids who just like brought her in because she was like so amazing at drums.
Wow.
Just like playing with like, that must be awesome.
Yeah.
And so they were called the Telephone Man. And so this kind of helped her, I think, kind of escape a little bit, kind of a sense of escapism. So she says, if I hadn't been in bands in middle school or high school, I don't know what I would have done. This sounds dramatic, but I just don't know that I would have survived being a teenager because I was just that unhappy. So she definitely used that as a, like a kind of like a source of being okay. And this comes back later to like using music for that sense.
I definitely think that that's like a really common sentiment, you know. Like, there's a ton of people that I know personally that like only went to school, like only was willing to go to school because they had band class or something, you know. I know this isn't necessarily what she's talking about, but like, you know, having that music to make with people, like, keep you going, that, you know.
Yeah I agree. I think like even like instrumentalists, like if we go too long without practicing, it's like, oh, we're missing something. Yeah. Like, something's missing. Yeah. Here. I totally get it. It's like a sense of, or like calm and organization, and like just like, oh, yeah. I feel at peace with myself. So she was in that punk band, she was rocking out, she was at this art school in high school, doing well. And then as soon as she was done, she took like the first thing she could do to leave Kentucky. And she went to study percussion at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
What a name.
Yeah. And this is a quote from her conversation she had with Ingrid Lobrock with Chamber Music America. When I picked a college, I didn't know any better. I just didn't want to be at home anymore. That was my criteria. I had seen it on a list of acceptable music schools. So she just kind of like, all right, let's get out of here.
acceptable and far away. Good enough.
Yeah. Totally. And so a lot of the time, I think she still spent doing literally what she was doing in high school, like kind of self-discovering and doing what she found interesting. But she did find support from a faculty member who praised a composition of hers. And then in 98, she wrote like a piece, which I think she kind of credits to being like one of the first like big, like really good pieces that she wrote, which was like a silent piece for piano, which was kind of a theater piece.
Silent piece, which is theater piece for piano. Oh,
yeah. It's cool. Like a theater. It's a theater piece for piano. Which is silent.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So from an interview with Impact, she says, personally, I think it's an asset to have not studied composition. I always have sort of consciously tried to develop something that was sort of outside of existing technique. So she kind of, yeah, she could take orchestration and she could learn all this stuff. But what she does is so unique and individual to her own like likings and interests in music and sound that it wouldn't have like done much, you know. For her.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that.
Yeah. So something that was just outside of tradition completely.
Yeah. You know, yeah, they say like in order to break the rules, you have to know the rules. And I do understand that, but like you're only going to break them so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I don't think you have to, like, I think listening to what she was doing was like already learning the rules, if you will, of like stuff that she was interested in and not stuff that she wasn't interested in. Which is, I mean, there's already a foundation and tradition of new, of experimental music and new music at this point, like that she could build off of. So I don't blame her. Throughout her college career, so she was trying to avoid playing in bands. I guess she was like, after that, I'm not going to play in bands anymore. And she has she said that anything related to rock music is a tool of capitalist oppression.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Wait.
Yeah. That took me a
minute. Can we unpack that for a second?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's.
So I thought that rock music was supposed to be like anti-establishment, right?
Right.
So how did we get to rock music is a tool of capitalist oppression?
I feel like once you're in the realm of rock music, I feel like that's a good cover, but maybe she was so far into it that she realized something that wasn't good and she was like, oh no.
Oh no.
But I
feel like there's so many things like that, I feel like.
Yeah, but I think she ended up like kind of being like, ah, because she like because she kept just like going back. She wanted to collaborate and she ended up playing in bands still and she just really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And she, yeah. And she's like mentioned before how she was in a rehearsal and she just kind of yelled out like, I love drums. Like, which is so, I love that.
Oh my God. What a mood.
Yeah.
I love drums.
Me too. Yeah. I can imagine how invigorating it must be to play like in a rock band, like play drums.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Just so. Yeah. Yeah, energizing.
Yeah.
And freeing. Mm-hmm. So after she finished her bachelor's in percussion, she moved to UC San Diego for her master's.
That's so close by.
Yeah, yeah, very much close by. So she was still there kind of doing her own thing, composing, and she wasn't really collaborating too much, but she did meet a friend, Greg Stewart, who would end up being in the part of a trio that she's in called the Meridian Trio with Tim Feeney, who is CalArts faculty. And I didn't know this until I was researching. I was like, oh, yeah. So the person I'm researching plays with someone who I took a class with, which is kind of like,
oh, my God.
A whole,
that's amazing.
Whole circle there. Yeah.
Do you think you could use your professor to get in touch with our new best friend, Sarah Hennies?
Yes, I think I can. I also could just probably just like email her and be like, hey,
well, that'll work too.
I'm a fan. I did follow her on Instagram recently.
Okay. I will also follow her on Instagram.
Yes.
I love her so much.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we like get in touch with her, we show her this episode and we're like, we're your biggest fans. And then like we can have a second Sarah Hennies episode. And which was just an interview with her.
That would be so amazing. Yeah.
I'd cry.
I would love to bring her on and like ask her so many questions.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's mm-hmm. In San Diego. She met Greg Stewart, who is part of this trio. And then she relocated to Austin for 10 years and she was collaborating a lot at this point. And she was playing with the Austin New Music Co-op. So doing a lot of work there. And then I'm just fast forward. I'm zooming forward to her transition. So at age 34, Sarah Hennies discovered that she was trans. And so I love this quote from her essay in Queer Percussion in Sound American, which is just kind of about just that moment discovering that she was trans. So, quote, the moment I realized my own transness was during a concert by a British band called The Spook School at the New York City Pop Fest. I heard their singer, Nye Todd, say, "What's next? Oh yeah, another song about being transgender." And suddenly, a wave of emotion and self-realization came over me. I used to listen to their album and cry, and I would say to my ex-partner, "Why is this making me cry?" She would shrug at what she perceived to be my trademark hypersensitivity. How had I not realized he was trans? How had I not realized that I was trans? So,
wow.
Yeah, just a beautiful quote there. And she, in a lot of her other interviews as well, she relates back to other artists that have kind of like, it's like, this is so gay, I love it. And it's like, us, me. Like, that's literally me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just awesome. And I think that just is another point for like, we need more representation and it's so important and it matters. And she covers this in that essay. It's just so important.
Yeah. You know, sometimes there are conversations surrounding representation where that gets so nuanced. It's like, this kind of representation is bad and this kind of representation is good, and that kind of things. But then those conversations also getting nuanced to the point where it's like, we shouldn't have coming out stories, except we should have coming out stories, except we shouldn't have, you know, this kind of thing. But honestly, the problem, in my opinion, is that we just need more representation across the board, you know? Because if, like, if everything in the media was gay, then it wouldn't matter if we had too many coming out stories or too many not coming out stories, because we would have so many things of all of the things, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think, in my opinion, for the most part, as long as it's true, like, based in truth and not, like, based off of stereotypes and gross misinformation, then any representation is good representation. Because, like, in this case, like, sometimes you just need to see it to be like, oh my god, that's me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm allowed to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, especially with people you look up to. And I think that's people don't think about that. Like, yeah, it really does make a difference for a lot of people. And she talks about also how, not in like a critical perspective, but like maybe out of safety, don't identify as trans. And she's like, why is that? And it's like, there's a lot of reasons why, but to like boil it down, like, I think that if we had more representation, and more safety for all trans people in general, I think it would be a lot easier for those who are trans to come out, or any, you know, those who are gay, those who are bisexual, like, if they didn't have to face those pressures from society and had someone to look up to, and, you know, it was just normalized.
Yeah,
So beautiful. I love that quote.
Oh my gosh.
Moment of warmth.
Yes.
So I want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that she touches on in her music. And so here's what I've gathered from a lot of her pieces, like kind of elements that she has used and different like philosophies and stuff like that. So one thing she uses is this thing I had no idea prior to researching her, but it's called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is kind of like a psychotherapy treatment that is kind of designed to heal trauma by using like bilateral stimulation. And that could be in the form of like, she says, for example, like one that she used when she was going through this therapy is someone tapping on the one leg and then the other leg kind of continuously. It kind of creates a new connection to kind of heal trauma. And when she was talking about this in another interview, it seemed like it was kind of about also, and she relates this in music, like kind of getting a sense of something becoming regular and safe. Which I really love. And so maybe like feeling safe in that environment, like, right. So something that's kind of consistent. Yeah. And and she was talking about like how in foster care, the class that she was taking, they talk a lot about that consistency and safety. Cause that's what I think everybody needs. So utilizing like bilateral stimulation in her music, or like that kind of idea of consistency, or regularity. And in one of her pieces, The Reinvention of Romance, she talks about this idea of two people cohabitating, like two people in a relationship cohabitating, and how it becomes so regular, and how it, after you know, years and years of being together, they're just like, they're so used to this routine and how that becomes nice. And so it's a beautiful piece that's on my recommended listening list. The Reinvention of Romance. Then another thing she uses is relating back to life and reflecting on other things that she had done before, and kind of like taking a new perspective on old material, which she had already written. And she has said this a lot, like where she take something and looks at it again, it's like completely different, or like she understands it better, like, than what it was. Maybe it was like, oh, I like this, and then like later she's like, I know why I like that. or why it was important at that moment. Maybe not even like something that was necessarily, I don't know. So like for one idea is like she was really into composing like pieces that were meant to challenge endurance. And so like the impossible. Hmm. And so I think she talks about this piece, I think it's called Clot, where it's just like so physically exhausting and it's like so like hard, where she would like end up like after two performances like blisters all over her hands and like she says like this is pre-transition, and she thinks that maybe she relates that to like self-abuse in some capacity. Oh. You know,
wow,
yeah,
holy moly,
right. And then another thing she relates to life is like identity and transition. I think falsetto, which starts out like super simple. It's and you can watch this online. It's on YouTube. It's a great piece where she is collecting these like handbells, which she had been collecting for years. These like little tiny broken handbells that she would find for like under $5 at like thrift stores, and she would just collect them and keep collecting them. Mm-hmm. And keep collecting them. And she was like, where are they coming from? Like, why, why are people like discarding these like beautiful little bells? Like, and so she uses them in this piece, and it's, it starts out kind of simple and then it gets more and more difficult until it becomes like completely unstable and then just like, topples over itself in performance. Where she's like doing a little kind of passage with wood blocks and then like shakers and stuff like that, and then she picks up a bell and then she gets another one, and it's another, and she's doing all this at the same time until it becomes so difficult. The way that changes over time and transforms is just really beautiful, I think, and it also relates to part of her life. Huge piece that I want to talk about as well, which is super interesting, is Contralto. And so this is, I think, probably the thing that she is most widely acclaimed for at this moment. So this piece is a piece for musicians and a film, which she basically filmed herself and she directed herself, like everything she did on her own. So that's this is like her first film, and she uses it in the piece kind of as an eighth ensemble member. So it's these musicians not accompanying the film, but it's the musicians and the film as one performance.
Okay.
This film depicts seven trans women who are utilizing their voice in different ways, humming, singing, doing exercises that are used in voice feminization therapy, which is like kind of a way to retrain women to use their voice to kind of sound more feminine. It's like beautifully shot. She did it in like in her house, like in a room with just like this white background. It's just a really moving piece, and you can rent it on her website and watch the piece, or you can also get it screened and you can like rent the score and have a screening with performance as well from her website. The idea of Contralto is that we want to kind of change the way society thinks about how a woman should sound. And it's so moving, because it's thinking about how trans women have to deal with this idea of sounding feminine in like society's perspective, where women sound like kind of have a higher voice, and even with hormones, like it does not change their voice like it does for trans men. When trans men take testosterone, their voice lowers, but it does not happen for trans women. So retraining the idea, it's kind of like a protest piece, but also creates like a safe, like a space for trans women that is so hard to find, I think, in the music community as it is. So just an amazing piece. It's so highly acclaimed. It's been performed all over. And it's just gorgeous.
Wow. That sounds really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like literally the whole time you've been talking, like this entire episode, I've been like, I can't wait till it's over so I can Google everything and like see it for myself.
Yeah. It's so, so much. Another listening recommendation. I really liked Humming Suite, which she wrote for cello and humming. It's just this beautiful piece of music for a cellist humming, and it's just, it's absolutely gorgeous. Like, I could listen to it for hours and hours and hours. Wow. And I did. but also, it's like, it's also another layer of nuance right here. So she wrote this for the cellist, and she was like, also asked her, like, oh, can you give me your range for humming? Like, what is your humming mm-hmm. range? And she wrote outside of that range on purpose. So it would be like outside of her comfort zone. And this is another like ideal that she brings back in her music a lot, is that when it's something is so difficult that you perform it, it's not like the intent to fail, but that it's so original in that performance, because it is hard and it's like, it's going to be original in its own way, and it's going to be unique in its own way. And even in contralto, like humming like higher, like the highest note she could possibly hum and like the lowest note she could possibly hum, like just getting that, like, of course it's going to be difficult, but that's like the beauty of writing in that sense. So again, it's just like another change of view for me reading about her and listening to her music. Reservoir 2, hashtag flute. What was the hashtag I used?
Hashtag flute fact?
Hashtag flute fact. Yeah, so Reservoirs is, she wrote some pieces called Reservoirs, and Reservoir 2.
That's how it should be said.
Yeah, Reservoir 2, which is for bass flute and moving voices.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
It is. Oh my gosh, I was like watching this, I was like, whoa. So and I can send you the link. This is a Facebook video of like a rehearsal, but it's Claire Chase playing bass flute and the Constellation Core, which is like, and it's like they're moving, Claire is like sitting in the center and playing bass flute, and then the choir is like moving around her and just like singing these just like long sustained notes. And it's just,
wow.
Oh my gosh. Just like transporting me into another completely different universe. And again, another aspect of hers is like timbre and sound in the room. And like, how does it like appear to us? How do we feel it in ourselves? Like physically, how does it affect us emotionally? Yeah. Like, so this is she's like amazing at this, obviously, because this piece was so interesting. I was watching a Facebook video and I was blown away. I can't imagine what it must have been like to be like in the audience, or even have been Clara Chase playing the bass flute like in the middle. Yeah. I would have been, oh my god.
Oof. Wow, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, it's so amazing. So in short, we love Sarah Hennies. She is so amazing, such an amazing composer. Everything she has written about music and identity is just so touching and thought-provoking. She currently lives in Ithaca, New York, with her wife, Mara Baldwin, who is a visual artist, and their son. She's had notable performances all over the world. And you can check out more of her music, rent her scores, buy her scores, and watch her film, Contralto, at sarahhennies.com. That's SARAH-HENNIES.com.
Woohoo! Yay!
And that is today's episode. So I hope you all go check her out.
Yeah, I definitely will. I'm so thrilled. Sarah Hennies has gained quite a big fan in me.
Yes, I feel super like, I loved reading about her, and I like can't wait to follow more of her music that comes out. I want to like talk to her and like, I don't know, support all of her music. You should all do the same.
Oh my gosh, I'm just so happy. Like, I generally don't care that much for new music, which maybe that's closed-minded of me, but in general, like, because you know, so often new music is just like so out there, it's like, yeah, this is cool and thought-provoking, but like, it's not fun to listen to.
Yeah,
but I'm like, throughout this whole episode, I've been so excited to go watch her videos, you know?
Yeah, I think it's...
I'm just so thrilled.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, like, at first, like, especially us coming from such a traditional classical perspective as flute players, like, it's, like, a hard world to get into and understand, and everything is just so different.
Yeah.
But when I was reading all of this, like, it was making sense. Like, I really enjoyed listening to all of this music. And I think this is, like, one of... I'm relatively new to new music. I've been at CalArts for, like, 2 years, and I still feel like I don't understand anything. But I feel like this is a great way for me to relate to it even more, just by the way she talks about sound and mm-hmm. her music and her upbringing. It's just so, yeah, inspiring.
Wow.
So please, everybody, check it out.
Yeah. We can all check it out together. I'm so happy.
Me too.
I'm so happy. Wow. Yay. So I guess this is our episode.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, listeners. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Our next episode is going to be a special one.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a special one. So keep your ears out. Get. What?
Wait, is that our next episode?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, good. I was just making sure. I was like, I don't know if we're...
That was Shahid making kissy noises.
That was me making kissy noises.
In case
noises.
You couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
Next episode. So stay tuned.
All right. Follow us on Instagram at ClassicalQueeros and at Twitter at ClassicalQueero. And you can, what can you do? You can
follow us on Spotify.
Follow us on Spotify. Subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere. And if you go to our anchor.fm page, if you so choose, you can make monthly like supporting payments for us to continue making this content. I understand that, like us, you all probably have no money, so like I'm not saying that you have to. But if you find yourself in, you know, possession of just a ton of extra money, and you're like, oh, I want to give it to some gays, then you can just give it to us, real, you know, that'd be nice.
If you win the
and
lottery.
And also what you can do. Yeah, if you win the lottery. Also what you can do is, like, sign up for a monthly contribution, make the first payment, and then cancel the rest of them. Like, just be like, here's $1, you know? That's an option,
nice.
Too.
Yeah. That pays for Alice's tea for, like, 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, and that's how I survive.
That's literally your whole diet.
That's my whole diet. I only drink tea.
Alice is
and
depending
then I eat
on
the tea
you.
Bags. I need you, please. Send me money so I can have tea.
That's all we can do now is pray that Alice will get some tea in the future from your support.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Woohoo.
Okay. Whoa, that was a hot mess.